What is up? Thanks for joining me. This is a UFC 217 post-fight breakdown, analysis, and unsolicited thoughts by your host. You know, I'm not sure that I'm going to start doing these for all of the UFCs, but if you, you know, if you follow mixed martial arts, if you follow fighting in general, I think we can agree that last night was something special. We had three title fights on the line and three titles changed hands. This is an unforgiving game. We'll start from the top of the main, from the bottom of the main card, work our way up to the main event, and just offer some reflections and analysis on the way there. As a quick side note, I found out yesterday that if you purchase the pay-per-view content from the UFC Fight Pass application, you do not have access to the prelims. You have access to the UFC Fight Pass prelims, which are, I think, increasingly eroding in value. Frankly, they're I think they used to put some more marquee names on the prelims, and they've kind of stopped doing that. It's not been as exciting lately. So I was actually not able to watch the prelims yesterday, but I think there's more than enough to talk about with just the main event. You know, starting with Johnny Hendricks and Paulo Costa, previously nicknamed Borrachina, right? And changed his nickname to The Eraser. You know, probably an acknowledgement that this was going to be Johnny Hendricks' last fight with the UFC should he lose. And so he was coming to New York City to erase his name off the roster. And you know, that's what happened. That's what happened. You know, I don't really have a lot to say on this particular fight, except to just offer a couple thoughts. You know, one is, you know, I had heard somewhere, I'm not sure if this is verified, but I'd heard somewhere that Johnny Hendricks had gone undefeated in high school wrestling, and is a handful of Americans to have ever done that. If you think about the mental fortitude and the toughness that it takes to start a 4-year undefeated streak at the age of, you know, 13. And so he was wrestling in elementary school, and he was wrestling in middle school, and went undefeated in high school, and is, you know, I think one of the most, I just think one of the most decorated, collegiate wrestlers of his generation. He fought with a lot of guts and worked his way up to being a UFC champion. You know, he started cutting weight in middle school. He started cutting weight in maybe in elementary school. Johnny Hendricks looks tired to me. He looks tired of competition. He looks tired of cutting weight. And I get it. You know, he looks like the type of tired that a simple vacation can't fix. He looks tired in his soul. I think it might be time for him to hang up the gloves. He doesn't look the way that he did look prior to USADA, which is the implementation of Olympic-level steroid testing in the UFC. Although, to be honest, I don't think any of us who watched those fights last night would be surprised if Paulo Costa popped for something dirty in the next week in that post-fight test, because he did not look... He did not look natural, but he looked very, very muscular, very ripped. You know, kind of had like a Yoel Romero type of physique. You know, the striking exchanges were, I think, were, you know, Hendricks was in it. It wasn't total domination until the very end, but I just hate to see these matchups. You know, Hendricks still, I think, has some residual name value from being a previous champion and from his contest where, you know, he arguably beat GSP. And, you know, that's kind of something that they do in the prize fighting world, is they sort of feed someone's name value to the next up and comer, you know. And the UFC is, you know, I think looking for a Brazilian star, right? I think all the, you know, if we go up and down the roster, who are the Brazilian stars that are left to service that market? Jose Aldo is no longer the dominant champion that he was. Anderson Silva is pushing 40 years old. That's just the two main ones off the top of my head. Henan Barão is, you know, fighting in the prelims or on the main card, but he's not the championship fighter that he used to be. You know, maybe Chris Cyborg can come back and can come back and win that championship belt and sort of service the Brazilian market's need for a champion. But it makes sense. I see why the UFC would sort of feed someone with Johnny Hendricks' name value to a guy like Paulo Costa. But I think it was visually a mismatch. I think Johnny Hendricks, is tired to his bones of competition. And I think that it's time for him to move on. I think him for a lot of entertaining fights. And it's not for me to say that it's time for him to move on, but I think he knows it's time for him to move on. Moving on ourselves to the next fight, Jorge Masvidal and Stephen Thompson. This was a fight where we had a small betting pool with the fight viewing party over at my home, and we all predicted winners and put like $5 in the pot, and whoever predicted the most winners at the end of the night took home the $40 or $50 or whatever it was. I had been thinking about Masvidal all week and just trying to figure out how it is that he gets a win over Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. And at the end, I just picked Masvidal to win this fight, because of his body of work and because he's such a well-rounded and accomplished fighter. But I should have gone with my gut. And picked Wonderboy Thompson. And the reason is that, I think Wonderboy's point fighting karate style and that long stance is going to give anybody with a traditional boxing or even like a Thai boxing background some fits. That completely bladed stance and that completely like wide separation of the feet, it really makes the boxer have to stand a lot further away than he would want to even begin striking. And so Wonderboy was doing a great job from the get-go of keeping Masvidal sort of at karate point fighting distance. If we'll say the different distances for fighting an MMA fight, I would say like maybe this is like boxing distance, this is sort of like the pocket, this is maybe kickboxing distance, and this is karate point fighting distance. And I feel like at the very beginning of the fight, you could just sort of tell that that the two fighters had naturally settled into a karate point fighting distance for the fight. And that was not going to be good for Masvidal. And that's exactly what happened. I'm looking back, I'm struggling to think of, any real moments where I thought that Masvidal had a chance of winning this fight. He landed a couple good shots, but it was clear that he was going on Thompson's ride and not that Thompson was taking Masvidal's ride. Thompson was very disciplined, I think, about moving and resetting his feet and, keeping the distance where he wanted to fight that fight, as opposed to, being sort of cajoled into a brawl with Masvidal. So I think Thompson did a wonderful job. With his lateral movement. He did this. He did this thing that I thought was super interesting. He kind of did like a jab, kind of stepping forward with his strikes. He would give Masvidal the sense that he was going to come directly in, and then at the last second, he would kind of take a step, a step off to the right or to the left, and get offline and hit him from an angle. He did that a couple times, and it was just gorgeous. Moving backwards, he was flicking jabs into Masvidal's face. He showed a great ability to fight going forwards, backwards, to defend the takedown, and really just was able to make Masvidal fight his fight as opposed to fighting Masvidal's fight. Not really a surprise to me after I watched sort of the first 30 seconds of the fight, and you see that they kind of settled into that distance that they did. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to really cover with this fight. No, except just to say that I think the I think the really proper boxers, like a Masvidal or like a Wonder or like a Woodley, and you know, frankly, even a GSP, I could see Wonderboy Thompson giving GSP some fits as well. GSP might be a little bit, might be able to be a little bit more insistent with his takedowns, but you know, Wonderboy's proven that he can fight the wrestlers as well. But I think that the, you know, these classic boxers and kickboxers need to get back in the drawing room and sort of figure out how they're going to handle a guy like Wonderboy Thompson, because that's a you know, that it's just a very unique style to have to fight, and it's clearly puzzling to a lot of folks. You know who did a good job with this, actually, I think, was Rampage when he fought Machida. You know, Rampage did a good job of not chasing him. He did a good job of countering him on the way in, and I think that's kind of what you have to do with a guy like Thompson. You can't chase him around. You know, he's light on his feet. He's ready to move, and he's ready to cut angles on you. And if you chase a guy with that many weapons around, you're gonna get tagged on the way in. It's better to just sort of hold you. You know, kind of like what Cody Garbrandt did to Dominic Cruz. He kind of held his ground and sort of made him come to him, and that allowed him to. That allowed him to counter strike and open up the exchanges on his terms, as opposed to simply following the karate guy around. Which I think it's clear you don't want to do that. You know, moving on to Joanna and Thug Rose. Rose gave me chills. Rose gave me chills this week. You know, I was so happy for her. I had a feeling about her all week. And again, when it was time to pick a winner for the sort of for our informal pool at our watch party, I did. I picked Joanna simply based on her body of work and because she was the heavy favorite. But man, I had this like unshakable type of feeling about Rose Namajunas. And I'm so glad to see her pull it out the way that she did. I think the biggest winner in this fight, frankly, is the UFC as a promotional organization, who's looking to, you know, who's inherently in the business of making stars. And you know, I think last night, in Rose, you know, a star was born. You know, my wife, who you know doesn't watch a lot of fighting, has to hear a lot of fight talk, you know, because she lives with me, but. You know, we were watching the UFC 217, the lead up to the fight, watching Joanna sort of be herself, kind of nasty to Rose, kind of nasty to Pat Barry. And in doing so, she sort of set up the inherently redemptive arc that Rose traveled through by knocking her out. You know, she set up Rose to be the next biggest star, I think. Because Rose got to play humble and, well, not play humble. She is humble. Rose got to be humble, keep her mouth shut, let her fist do the talking and, you know, and stay steely eyed. Rose was just totally steely eyed in the stare down in the weigh-ins, prior to the fight. Rose was just totally stoic, steely eyed, and just a really classy competitor, and then she backed up her. You know, she did her talking in the octagon and won that championship belt. Biggest upset of the night, if you go by the Vegas odds makers. But I think there's a lot of people out there that just had a feeling about Rose. You know, she looks like a killer. You know, she looks. You know, she takes this very seriously. You know, she's bunking up. She's living with Pat Barry, who's a very accomplished kickboxer in his own right. And it's clear that she's just been a student of the game for much of her adult life. This is a little bit of a detour, but I'd like to share this. There was a clip posted to Instagram. I think Pat Barry posted a clip of Rose playing a piano piece by Chopinski. And it was just stunningly gorgeous. It was just so beautiful. I had no idea Rose was a musician. If you have a moment to look it up on her Instagram and check out this clip of her playing the piano, you can see that she's somebody that sort of steadily applies herself to whatever craft she's attempting to learn until she has mastery over it. As I read the comments on that particular post, I read that it was a piece by Chopinski, and you really can't play that particular piece unless you're kind of at a master level of being a musician. And so, you know, just that kind of gave me, I felt like that kind of gave me some insight just in terms of kind of knowing who Rose is. She doesn't do a lot of talking, clearly just applies herself very diligently until she has mastery over something. You know, as far as the fight itself, I think it's no secret that Joanna gets hit. You know, Claudia Gadelha tagged her, Carolina tagged her, you know, she does get hit, but she's always had this chin on her and she's always sort of like worn her opponents down over time. You know, I think Joanna's somebody that really knocks that one punch KO type of power, but rather sort of peppers you, seasons you, and sort of kills you death by a thousand cuts. What we saw last night is, you know, Rose was just not at all afraid to jump into the pocket with Joanna. That kind of reminded me of when Alan Belcher jumped into the leg lock game with that Brazilian guy that's known for the leg locks, whose name escapes me now because I'm having a brain fart. But you know, the point being that, you know, Rose just jumped right into the pocket, unafraid to exchange, and kept finding a home for that right hand. I think before Rose finally landed that left hand, which ultimately produced the knockout, Rose had landed like three or four right hands in the course of the first, you know, of the first couple minutes, and was really making Joanna respect that right hand until she finally, I think she kind of fainted it and then came over with the left. Just an absolutely beautiful knockout. Joanna actually tapped to strikes. And she was humble in defeat, to be honest. Joanna was humble in defeat. If you looked at the post-fight press conference, there's a number of reporters that were sort of like looking to talk to Joanna about, you know, what went wrong. Is there any, you know, were you doing too much media? Maybe you had a bad weight cut. You know, whatever. Joanna was, I think, crystal clear about the whole thing. She says, you know, let's leave this aside. I lost. You know, Rose got me fair and square, which I think is really classy of Joanna. I hope she'll be back. But, you know, I feel like there's this thing that happens with really dominant champions once they sort of get toppled from the top like that. They don't have a great history of reinventing themselves and coming back. And, you know, this is a brutal and unforgiving game. And, you know, it didn't take long for women's MMA to really, to quickly evolve and produce some world-class athletes. You know, I think just two or three years ago, we were saying, I think a lot of folks were saying that women's MMA still had not developed the level of, frankly, of professionalism that the men's side had, simply because there weren't as many athletes interested in doing it. There weren't as many athletes wrestling or doing jiu-jitsu in sort of these feeder organizations that feed up to the UFC. And also because it was just a young sport and it takes time to develop. Just a few years later, we see a champion like Rose rise up, I think, a lot quicker than anybody could have predicted. And she's, you know, she's a total package, right? She can box, she can kickbox, she can wrestle, and her submission game on the ground is absolutely scary. She's as well-rounded a mixed martial artist as anyone that we have on the men's side. And boy, was that fast to happen. You know, just a couple years ago, Ronda Rousey was champion, and she was a one-trick pony. So the evolution of the game has been tremendous to watch from the women's side. And, you know, I know I said it just a moment ago, but I'll say it again. Rose, I think, can really has what it takes to be a star. She's fantastically pretty, very stoic, totally humble, and just really kind of has the right attitude for the camera. She's just, you know, you can't help but like her. And, you know, she also speaks English, which is a huge asset. The UFC was, I think, really trying to market and push Joanna, for the longest time. And, you know, she did a good job of opening up the Polish market for the UFC, but it was hard to sort of get her over here in the United States because she didn't have the best English. So I think the UFC is probably, you know, probably glad that they have a women's strawweight champion that's probably going to be a little bit more marketable because they are inherently in the business of selling fights. Moving on, I think that's all I really have to say about Rose and Joanna. Also, just to say how happy I am for Pat Barry. You know, Pat's a guy who's gone through a lot of adversity. I think didn't have the most remarkable career as a boxer, as a kickboxer and MMA fighter on his own, but seems to have really hit his stride as a coach and has developed a protege that has perhaps gone farther in a quicker period of time that even he could have expected. So I'm just so tremendously happy for them both. Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw, you know, tough fight to really pick. I mean, tough fight to pick. You know, for me, frankly, knowing both of these guys, right? I'm mainly a jiu-jitsu practitioner, but I'm out of Team Alpha Male in Sacramento. I actually live just a few blocks away from the gym. And so I've known both of these guys. And what can I say except, you know, rivalry aside, I'm not on the professional MMA team. So I don't really have a lot of insights into what happens at practice between them or, you know, the nature of the accusations that were flung at TJ or any of that. I don't really have a lot to say about that, but I do feel like I know both their characters a little bit, just having seen them in the gym, having been in practices with them, having been in grappling practices with both of them. And I didn't really have it in my heart, to be totally honest. I did not have it in my heart to root for or against either one of these guys. You know, I still remember pretty vividly, you know, TJ being in the gym, you know, over at Alpha Male, day in and day out, and just being the nicest guy, you know, at least to me. Maybe other people had different experiences with him, and I certainly wasn't, you know, MMA sparring with him, but, you know, he'd always come up to me and be like, "Hey, Jabron, how are you? Good to see you." You know, to me, who am I? You know, I was a purple belt at the gym at the time, and he's like coming up and saying hello, and, you know, he actually like knows me and is kind of like curious and kind of, I don't know, just like friendly, you know, to a civilian at the gym. And same thing with Cody. You know, it's absolutely the same thing with Cody. You could not find a nicer guy. You could not find a nicer, more genuine person than Cody Garbrandt. And, you know, I actually think it's kind of interesting. These guys are, you know, in a way almost like brothers. You know, they're both champions in their own rights. They both are either married or recently married or getting married. They both have children on the way. And, you know, they're both attempting to occupy the same spot at the top of the roster. I kind of wish that there wasn't so much bad blood between the two because they're both just tremendous athletes. And from what I've seen, they're both just tremendous people. I think Cody Garbrandt has probably a little bit more marketability value to the UFC. And I think just has his finger better on the pulse of what he needs to do to be famous in areas outside of fighting. You know, he's got a better look for it just in terms of like the camera really likes him. He looks like a fighter, but he's also just a really great guy. And that's, you know, that contrast is, I think, inherently compelling. Additionally, he just has a wonderful life story and has you know, and has like, of course, some real appeal to the fans because he produces knockouts in really stunning fashion. TJ Dillashaw caught him last night. And I will just quickly offer that it was sort of reminded me of the Masvidal and Thompson fight, but it was much more competitive than the Masvidal and Thompson fight. But what I mean by that is that when the two fighters settled into the fight, they were more at a kickboxing range, which is really TJ's bread and butter, and less of a boxing range. I think it's clear that Cody would have preferred to fight the entire fight in the pocket because that's his strength. And TJ didn't do that. TJ stayed at a kickboxing range, and you know, he did a really good job with those kicks, both setting them up in the first round and just in the second round, he just started blasting them. He just started blasting those kicks. TJ did a good job of staying behind those kicks and staying, you know, of not being totally in the pocket for the whole fight, because you don't want to do that with Cody. He'll start you. My heart was in my throat kind of the whole fight, because I felt like there was a real chance that Cody would just walk out and starch TJ at any moment. You know, Cody has that kind of power. He's that kind of athlete. His hands are, not only are they powerful, but they're fast and they're educated. You know, if you see how precisely he lands these shots and how quickly he flurries them out, he's scary. He's scary good. I can't wait to watch him fight again. I'll be rooting for Cody every single time that he fights. But yeah, you know, I think there's a really interesting sort of triangle there at the 135 division between Cody, TJ, and Dominic Cruz. I don't think TJ should go down and fight Mighty Mouse. I don't think that's good for the division. I think the UFC should, you know, do a better job of sticking to their business model of fostering competitive divisions and allowing the challengers to come up and allowing and, you know, requiring champions to defend their belts. Insofar as TJ would have to take, I think, quite a bit of time off to challenge for that 125 belt. I'm not sure that it's good for the division, and I'm not sure that it does anything to give the drama that is inherently there between Cody and TJ and Dominic Cruz the competitive atmosphere that it needs to be able to unfold. I think that the UFC, from a promotional standpoint, and also just from a fan point, from a fight fan standpoint, I think the more compelling matchups are, you know, sort of in those top 3 to 5 guys in the 135 pound division, continuing to duke it out. I want to see TJ fight Cruz again at some point, you know, and I'm not sure that Cruz didn't win that first fight, to be perfectly honest. I think he did win the first fight fair and square, even though it was a split decision. And so, you know, you kind of have this, like, this triangle going round and round, right? Like, Cruz beats TJ, TJ beats Cody, Cody beats Cruz. I just think that's an interesting, I just think that's an interesting lineup at 135, and I think Cody deserves another shot at that belt, to be honest. You know, whether he has to take a fight, you know, whether you need him to starch someone in the top 10 or just come back right away, I think he deserves another shot at that title. But yeah, you know, and just personally, I'm really proud of the way that Cody went out there for the press conference right after the fight. Clearly a very emotional moment. A lot of champions don't do that. You know, you can't find him after the fight, after a knockout like that. You can't find him at the press conference. But he, you know, Cody dusted himself off, and he went to that press conference, and he fielded all questions. He's an example. He's an example in winning, and he's an example in how to take a loss as well. Could not be more proud of him. Finally, the main event. GSP and Michael Bisping. Man, what can I say about this fight? You know, there'd been some rumors, I think, out there in the ether that GSP wasn't looking too good. He was maybe a little overweight, but not looking as ripped and muscular as he normally does. And you know, I think that's kind of true. When we saw him, you know, step into the octagon, he didn't look totally. He didn't look as shredded as he normally does at 170. Now that is because he, you know, put on 15 pounds of mostly muscle, but he lacked that really like shredded physique that he's known for. I didn't know what to think of this fight until I saw it. The days and weeks leading up to this fight, I sort of kept hoping to myself that GSP wasn't the type of guy to come out of retirement just to cash another check, that he wouldn't do that to his legacy, and that he was taking this fight preparation seriously. And I was just really hoping that he would not tarnish his legacy in coming back. But you know, it's it's an easy thing to doubt, right? Michael Bisping is the winningest fighter in UFC history, and is a lot bigger than GSP. And Michael Bisping on paper, at least, should be a bad matchup for GSP, right? On paper, he's better than GSP at what GSP is good at, by which I mean Michael Bisping is probably supposed to be a better boxer, bigger guy, and a phenomenal takedown defense, which is something that GSP really counts on, is those takedowns to open up the exchanges in the fight that he wants to be in. What we saw instead, I think, was GSP getting the better of the boxing exchanges, which I certainly did not expect. As GSP kept finding a home for that right hand, he started finding openings for the takedown as well. And I think that's really the story of the fight, was simply that Bisping couldn't fully commit to his strikes and fully commit to the forward movement necessary for competent boxing. Not for his style of boxing. He couldn't totally commit to that forward movement that he needed, you know, for fear of the takedown. Bisping did some excellent work in the guard, in that takedown in every takedown that GSP landed, Bisping got right back up. And the one time where he was fully in, where GSP was fully in Bisping's guard, Bisping did just a phenomenal job of cutting him up from the bottom with the elbows. They get back up and GSP's huffing and puffing, and I think clearly on his way to gassing out and dropping a decision. And what does he do? He finds a home for that punch that ended the fight. Displayed his grit, displayed why he's a champion. I don't think we can do anything but call him the greatest of all time at this point. Two belts in two different weight classes, never popped for steroids. Total class act the whole way through. And he's also, you know, I think one thing that's compelling about GSP, and I'm not sure that you can say this for a lot of other fighters, he's fought his way through, you know, probably four generations of fighters and challengers. When he started fighting, Mayhem Miller was a competitive matchup when he started fighting. You know, he fought through Mayhem Miller, you know, BJ Penn back when BJ was competitive, Josh Koscheck was supposed to be a threat. You know, he was fighting back when Josh Koscheck was a threat to him. John Fitch, Thiago Alves. You know, and then sort of like that next generation of fighters that came after, right? The next generation of challengers that came after that. The Dan Hardys, the Carlos Condits, Nick Diaz, of course, Johnny Hendricks. I'm probably missing some here along the way. But just to say that GSP has evolved with the game every step of the way and has come back and showed us that he's still had one more arrow in the quiver. So tremendously happy for him. I'm not sure what's next for him. You know, if I'm GSP, I try to get a fight with Connor, right? It's probably the biggest UFC pay-per-view of all time. If they can get GSP and Connor to meet at 170, that's an incredible, that's a dream fight. Who knows who wins that fight? So, you know, in closing, I think that the biggest winner tonight is the UFC in terms of diluting the star power of Conor, frankly. Conor's in this position, or was in this position, probably still is a little bit. We're sort of like the only big star, like big star on the roster. And so that inherently gives him some leverage. By bringing GSP back into the mix and Rose kind of having a coming out, you know, having a breakthrough the way that she did last night, I think it's clear that the UFC is going to quickly add two more superstars to its roster and dilute Connor's leverage in negotiations. So, it was also just a great night of fights. So thanks for joining me. This was our UFC 217 post-fight breakdown analysis. I'm not sure if I'm going to do these for every night of fights, but, you know, like I said, I think we can all agree last night was something special. Thanks for joining. Like, share, and comment below. Thanks.